Vayehi b'mei Achashverosh, hu Achashverosh, hamolech mehodu v'yad kush sheva, v'yasrimu mea medina, bayomim hohem kishevet, hamelech Achashverosh, al kisei malchuto asher b'shushan habira.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Ah, you're here. Good. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Ki Tisa, but you probably won't recognize it, because it's really going to be about Purim. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 14th day of Adar, 5772, which is Purim for the entire Jewish world, with the unique exception of Yerushalayim, which celebrates Purim beginning tonight and tomorrow, Friday, the 15th of Adar. So I'm sitting here in my office. In a couple of hours, we will have Mincha Im Yiratz Hashem, followed by a mini shiur that I will be giving, followed by Arvit and Megillat Esther, which we have not yet heard in Yerushalayim, when by this time that I'm even recording, Jews all over Israel, except in Yerushalayim, have heard Megillah twice, last night and this morning, and have given Shalach Manot and Matanot Le'Evyonim, and have been saying Al Hanisim in the Davening, and heard a special Torah reading this morning, and we'll have Su'udat Purim. Many people are right now all over Israel sitting down to their Purim Su'udah. If you move the clock all the way to, let's say, New York time, then we're talking, I'll tell you exactly, it's 3:45 in the afternoon in Israel, which makes it 8:45. Yes? 7 hours earlier, 8:45 in the morning. So you probably have people who have already heard the Megillah the second time on the day. It's a crazy kind of situation. It's a unique kind of situation that we in Yerushalayim ended the fast last night and broke our fast right after Maariv and did whatever we wanted to do without that immediate pressure of Megillat Esther while you're still fasting, and then we sit back and we watch Purim being celebrated on television, on the radio, and all over the country, and we smile and we say, for us, not yet. So it's a little odd. I'm recording this in the afternoon of everyone else's Purim, and that's good, because I am not yet under the influence of wine, which I probably would be the same time tomorrow, and it would be too late for me to broadcast and record and broadcast tomorrow anyway. So I'm doing it on Thursday as I usually do. As I said, the parsha this week is Ki Tisa, but I want to focus on Purim. So what you've heard so far was La Yehudim Hayata Ora V'Simcha V'Sason V'Kor, a famous verse that comes from Megillat Esther, a verse that is made further the most famous of the verses, I would say, because it is borrowed by Havdalah every Motzoi Shabbat, every Saturday night. When we say Havdalah, the introductory verses include a quote from Megillat Esther, La Yehudim Hayata Ora V'Simcha V'Sason V'Yekar, and then whoever composed the introduction to Havdalah added, Kain Tehiyeh Lanu, so shall it be for us. That's significant also. I'll talk about all of this in a moment, but let's not forget the Tehillim that we say, because we have a lot of people still to pray for, and this one, because today is no Tachanun, is Psalm 121, Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph. Shir Lama Alot, Esa Einai El Heharim, Me'ayin Yavo Ezri. Ezri Me'im Adonai, Osei Shamayim Va'aretz. Al Yitain Lamot Raglecha, Al Yanum Shomerecha, Hine Lo Yanum Velo Yishan, Shomer Yisrael. Adonai Shomerecha, Adonai Tzilecha, Al Yad Yeminecha. Yomam Hashemesh Lo Yakeka, V'yoreach Balayla. Adonai Yishmorcha Mikol Ra, Yishmoret Nafshecha, Adonai Yishmor Tzeitecha Uvoecha, Me'ata V'ad Olam. Achenu kol Beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara uvashivya, ha'omidim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem, mitzara lirvacha umeafela laora, umishibud legeula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, v'nomar amen. Now let me go back to the verse we were talking about, La Yehudim Hayata. You heard the song at the beginning of the show. I've told you it's from Megillat Esther, and I've told you that it's been borrowed for Hallel, for Havdalah. The context from the Megillah is very significant because it had previously described the state that the Jews of the kingdom of Ahasuerus, and specifically the city of Shushan, were in after Haman's plot was decreed and circulated and publicized. And things were not very happy for them. And then, as a result of the overturning of the whole story, La Yehudim, for the Jews, Hayata, Ora V'Simcha, there was light and joy, Sason, another term for joy and happiness, Vikar. And that sentiment is borrowed weekly after a restful, meaningful, spiritual, and physical Shabbat, to say, let this be so, not just as it was in Megillat Esther, but Kain Tehiyeh Lanu, so it should be for us. It's a very significant prayer that borrows that verse and extends it in hope and prayer to Jewish communities all over the world in all generations. So that's as far as La Yehudim. Then I read the first two psukim of the Megillah. There are quite a number of others, but I really should read at least the first two psukim of Ki Tisa, because not only does Purim correspond this year to Ki Tisa, which is, or right before Ki Tisa, there's something significant which I'll get to in a moment. But this is how those first two verses sound. Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe lemar ki tisa et rosh bnei Yisrael lifkudehem v'natenu ishko fernafsho lashem bifkod otam v'lo yevahem negef bifkod otam. Hashem speaks to Moshe saying, when you take a census of the children of Israel according to their numbers, every man shall give Hashem an atonement for his soul when counting them, so that there will not be a plague among them when counting them. This is the opening verses not only of Parshat Ki Tisa, but of Parshat Shekalim, which we read a couple of weeks ago, and the significance of Shekalim being at the beginning of the month of Adar, and right now we're in the middle of the month, is twofold. Number one, the Mishnah, as I probably mentioned a couple of weeks ago, states that it was on Rosh Chodesh Adar, the first day of Adar, that announcements were made all over the country to put your prutot, your little pennies together, in order to collect that half silver shekel coin and donate it sometime during the month of Adar, because the fund that was supplied by this Machatzit HaShekel was used for the beginning of the new fiscal year of the temple, which begins in the first of Nisan. And this gift of half of silver shekel is used for communal needs and communal offerings in the Beit HaMikdash, and it serves as an amazing unifying feature of Bnei Yisrael, because we are one people. Now, the second significance to Shekalim preceding Purim, and as I said, now it also follows Purim, because the very next day, or 2 days later on Shabbat, now here's part of your irony about this. This morning, that means Thursday, Erev Shabbat Kitisa, Erev Purim for us in Yerushalayim, Purim Day for everywhere else, but in Yerushalayim, instead of reading the special Torah reading for Purim, which we will read Amir Tzashem tomorrow morning, we read the beginning of Parshat Ki Tisa, as you always do on a Monday and a Thursday. So it turns out that on the Purim Day of the majority of the Jews in the world, we in Yerushalayim, who have not yet begun Purim, read the beginning of Parshat Ki Tisa, which includes this portion about the half shekel, and its significance not just to the month of Adar, as I stated already, its significance to the holiday of Purim is because Haman, the arch-villain and the incarnate of all of our enemies throughout history, he approaches King Ahasuerus and he says, you have a nation scattered and fractionalized among your provinces. Therefore, you don't have to worry about them getting together, unifying to defend themselves. Just let me have permission, royal permission, to destroy them, and I will bring to your coffers 10,000 silver talents. 10,000 silver talents with 3,000 talent, shekalim per talent. I don't know if the numbers are going to work exactly here, but 10,000 times 3,000 is 300 million shekalim, which is 600 million half shekalim. So it doesn't work, because 600,000 is the term that that we associate with the people of Israel having come out of Egypt. Be that as it may, it is Haman who offered Ahasuerus silver to destroy the nation which he said was scattered and fractionalized all and dispersed all over the kingdom, and we say we already have the antidote to your poisonous offer to Ahasuerus, because that is the mitzvah of the half shekel, half shekel. Here's an interesting side note. There is a name for a half shekel. It's called a beka. But it's not called beka in this mitzvah. It is called machatzit ha-shekel, half of a shekel. Half means part. And the symbolic gesture of the contribution being a half shekel is that all of Kalal Yisrael, all the people of Israel, contribute to a unified form, in a unified form, to the temple for its communal activities on behalf of all the people. In other words, we say to the Hamans in the world, we are united. We might be scattered in different countries, but we are not fractionalized. We are one people. And that's what the Shkalim represents, and that's why it is read at the beginning of the month of Adar as an intro to Purim, and that's why it turns out that we actually read it this morning on Purim, and we will all read it on Shabbat immediately after Purim to make that point. It's a very, very significant point. I probably mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, but I'll say it again. I remember an interview that I saw on TV with people, non-Jewish people, in various countries of the former Soviet Union. And one of them said, we are very jealous and envious of the Jews from our country. And the interviewer was surprised, and he asked, why would that be so? He said, because the Jews are getting permission to go out, and we are stuck here. And he further elaborated on that. He said, the Jews are getting out because there are people in this world, in many different countries, who are also Jewish, and they care about their brothers. They don't know these Jews from here, they don't speak the same language as these Jews, but they care about their fellow brothers, and they pressured at the United Nations and at the embassies to let my people go, and the Jews only received permission to leave the Soviet Union when the rest of us were stuck here. And the guy added, says, I am a Christian, and there are Christians all over the world, many, many more than Jews, but they don't care about us. The Jews care about each other. Now that was a very sad but very heartwarming statement that this fellow made, because it puts a lie to Haman and to the Hamans in the world. Haman had the arrogance to announce and publicize his plot against the Jews almost a full year in advance, as if he were not afraid of them at all. And in short order, Mordechai, Esther, Haman was gone. But the threat remained because of Ahasuerus's phenomenal policy of any decree that I make can't be rescinded. So the best he was able to offer Esther was, you make a decree and I'll approve it, whatever it is. And that's the bulk of that part of the Purim story. But the message of Shekalim. Now, in addition to reading about the machatzit ha-shekel, the half-shekel, at the beginning of the month of Adar, there is a minhag on Erev Purim, the day before Purim, the mincha before Purim, right before Megillah, whatever, different people have it at different times, to give 3 half-shekel coins here in Israel, 3 half-dollar coins in the States, 3 half-pounds in England, 3 half-francs in France, etc., etc., as a zecher, a commemoration of the machatzit ha-shekel. So it's not just Adar that Shkalim were announced, and it was not just for the function in the Beit HaMikdash. in Nisan and onward that we mention Shkalim, it has a very, very strong and important Purim connection. Now, I sort of promised myself I would not get to the somber and sober part of the background of Purim, but I will say, apropos what I've just been talking about, is we have a continuing challenge. Continuous, continual, continuing, say it any way you want, of seeing if what Haman said is really the lie that we want it to be, or if there's truth in it. In other words, in any generation, in every generation, the Jews have to ask themselves, are we this Am Mefuzar Umeforad Bein Ha'amim, or are we a united people as symbolized by the Machatzit HaShekel? And the answer sometimes is good and sometimes not as good. But the social activism of Jews in many countries on behalf of Jews less fortunate than them, in situations more difficult than them, is a very heartwarming thing, because it does put the lie to Haman's statement, and it wasn't just Haman who said it. A lot of times we think in terms of Haman as being somewhat of a buffoon, because he was so arrogant. Just the one episode in the Megillah that adds to the arrogance of Haman, when the king asks his advice as his trusted advisor, what should I do with a person I want to honor? Haman immediately assumes it's himself, because who would be worthy of honor from the king more than him, more than he? So he gives this elaborate plan with the garments of the king and the crown of the king, etc., etc. And the king says, okay, do that to Mordechai the Jew and don't leave any detail out of it. And this was terribly humiliating for Haman. So he comes across as a buffoon, and we shouldn't lose sight that later Haman characters are not so buffoon. I don't think we could put Hitler, Yimach Shemo, in that category. He had that same Haman style, a desire to destroy all the Jews, and he did a very good job, unfortunately, towards his goal, even though he ultimately failed. Hold that thought, and we'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio for Purim, and who knows, maybe even some of Ki Tisa.
Bachodesh Hashalishi, who Chodesh Sivan, Bishloshavi Esarim, Bo, Vaikatev, Kholasher Tsiva, Mordechai, Alhayudim, Vilha Achashdar Panim, Vahapachot, Visare hamedinot asher mehodu v'yad kush. Sheva v'yasrim umea medina, medina umedina kichtava. Ve'am va'am kilshono. V'el hayehudim kichtavam v'chilshonam.
That was from the book of Esther, chapter 8, verse 9. In English it sounds like this. So they summoned the king's scribes at that time, in the third month, which is the month of Sivan, on the 23rd day, and it was written as Mordechai had dictated to the Jews and to the satraps, the governors and officials of the provinces from Hodu to Cush, 127 provinces, to each province in its own script, and each people in its own language, and to the Jews in their own script and language. Now that's one of the psukim in Megillah, but it has a distinction. It happens to be the very longest verse in all of the Bible, in all of Tanakh, 43 words. There is none that comes close to it. Actually, there is in Megillah, but it is quite a long verse. Hebrew is a much more concise language than English. I don't even know how many words this came out in English. But that particular verse, which I read but maybe chopped at the beginning a little bit, 43 words, the longest in all of Tanakh. Megillat Esther has another distinction of that in that trivia category. It has the longest word in Tanakh, an 11-letter word, V'ho Achashdar Penim, not in this verse, but in one of the ones around it, V'ho Achashdar Penim. The Achashdar Penim are some kind of officials in the Persian kingdom. It's not really a Hebrew word. Hebrew words are usually not that long, but this ranks as the longest word in Tanakh. So Megillah has that distinction as well. The opening song I wanted to talk about to this second half of the show, and welcome back to Torah Tidbits Audio, for Purim. That is a line from a long, long blessing that is said after the reading of the Megillah. Now, since you're listening to this after the Megillah has been read for this year, I don't have to go into the halachic details, but there are three verses that are said before Megillah, and one bracha after, blessing after the Megillah, which is quite long at night, and is condensed and shortened for the daytime reading of the Megillah. Towards the very, very end, we say the famous Arur Haman, cursed is Haman, Asher Bikesh La'abedi, who wanted to destroy and vanquish me. Baruch Mordechai HaYehudi, blessed is Mordechai the Jew. Arura Zeresh, Eshet Mafchidi, cursed is Zeresh, the wife of the one who instilled fear in the people, namely the Haman's wife. Berucha Esther Ba'adi, and blessed is Esther, who sacrificed on our behalf, on my behalf. And then at the very end, we say, V'gam Charvona Zachur Latov. And Charvona, too, may he be remembered for good. Who is Charvona? Charvona is the one with perfect timing as far as we're concerned. In the story of the book of Esther, Esther invites Ahasuerus, her husband, and Haman, his prime minister, to a private party, just the three of them. The king knows that she wants to ask for something, and at that first day she says, my desire and my request is that the two of you join me again tomorrow, and tomorrow I will tell the king what I want. And there's a lot of things that happen until then, and now we're at the second party, where Ahasuerus, according to our commentaries, is already quite annoyed and suspicious of Haman. How come the queen keeps inviting just him, in addition to Ahasuerus? And that's when Esther reveals her identity as a Jew and points the finger at Haman as the one who desired to destroy. The king is beside himself with rage, and he takes leave to walk in his garden, and then comes back. In the meantime, Haman has fallen face down to beseech Esther for his life. The way it looks when the king returns is a very compromising kind of scene. It looks like Haman has fallen onto Esther's couch bed, whatever. And his royal pronouncement is, "Did you come to conquer the queen in my palace as well?" And Haman is really scared for his life. And then Charvona, one of the advisors of the king, comes in with the helpful tidbit of information. And he says, "By the way, there is a tree or a hanging post 50 amot tall in the courtyard of Haman's house waiting to hang Mordechai on it. You know that Mordechai, the one who saved the king's life?" And the king, with a snap of his finger, says, "Tiluhu alav, hang him on that." Just a little interesting background also. The way the Megillah unfolds in the beginning is that the king does not act on his own. He has a council of 7 advisors that he consults, and based on their advice, he makes a pronouncement. Haman needed to get rid of that system, and he did when he asked for the Jews to be destroyed. He basically coaxed Ahasuerus into being a man and making his own decisions and not always consulting with the advisors, and Ahasuerus complied, which opened the door, ironically, for his snap judgment now of Tiluhu Alav without needing to convene his council of advisors and put before them whether Haman should be executed or not. That's one of the many, many ironies in the Book of Esther. So that's Vegam Charvona Zochur Latov. That was the song, a whole song, just in honor of Charvona, who chimed in. He was not a friend necessarily of the Jewish people, although there are different opinions as to who he actually was. Maybe he was, maybe he was even Jewish, but the way the Megillah reads is that that's just what Haman needed at that time, and it worked out propitious for us, and therefore we not only remember Mordechai and Esther favorably, but we put in the good word, Vegam Charvona Zachur Latov. And on the other side of the spectrum, it's cursed is Haman, and cursed is his wife Zeresh, who gave him the advice to kill Mordechai and a few other prime pieces of advice. I make it my business when I hear Megillah to make noise with my grogger, not just for Haman's name, but I do it for the 4 times that Zeresh's name is mentioned. The first time, it usually is me alone making that noise. It is usually I making a noise by myself, and by the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th time, other people who got a kick out of the fact that we are equal opportunity noise recipients, and the feminists should pay the price as well, join in and make noise for Zeresh as well. Okay, you just heard a little clip of a song, another Purim song that quotes the Talmud. That's kind of a little touchy. The statement in the Talmud is, a person has to imbibe in wine enough to the point where the distinction between blessed is Mordechai and cursed is Haman gets fuzzy. That's my words. This is the source, ad delo yada, until you don't know the difference. This is the source of drinking wine in excess, more than you usually drink, on Purim. Now, the first thing I have to say, that was the first thing. The second thing that I have to say is this concept has been grossly misused and abused by different types of Jews to get roaring drunk on Purim, and I believe that's not at all what was in mind. First of all, the drinking of any other beverage other than wine does not really belong in the Purim story or the Purim commemoration. Wine does. The whole thing started first when Ahasuerus was in a good mood from his wine, and he demanded that Vashti appear before him, his queen at the time, and she refused, and he consulted with his council, and he got rid of Vashti, and that led to the contest and competition that resulted in Esther being in the right place at the right time 5 years hence. That's another point. But that's the way it worked. Then when Esther wants to speak to the king, she does it in the context of a wine party, and the second day as well. So wine is very much a prop in the Purim story, and therefore it is definitely appropriate to commemorate Purim and celebrate Purim with wine even more than you usually drink. And to get to a comfortable state, maybe a sleepy state. Many of the commentaries say that if the wine puts you to sleep and you have to take a nap, even a brief nap on Purim day, you have fulfilled the concept of ad delo yada, not knowing, to distinguish between Baruch Mordechai and Or Haman, because that's something you really can't do while you're sleeping. And I, as a former math teacher and a still math person, always like the numeric explanation of that. It's not real, but it's something that fits in nicely, and that is that Baruch Mordechai and Or Haman are numerically equal. And when you take the reverse code of the alphabet by considering Aleph not to be 1, the first letter, but Taf, 400, the last letter, and you keep flipping from Aleph to Taf and Bet to Shin and Gimel to Resh, etc., and then you do the calculation of Or Haman and Baruch Mordechai, you get two numbers which are one off. I don't remember the numbers at the moment. 501, 502 is something, 596, 595, whatever. Doesn't matter. The point is that if you have drunk enough wine so that you're not able to make an accurate calculation of numeric value, then you do not know the distinction between Or Haman and Baruch Mordechai, and you have numerically fulfilled the concept of Ad Delo Yada. On the other hand, there's a serious note to take from that, and that is the fact that numerically the numbers are so evenly matched, and therefore in backtracking, the words themselves, Or Haman and Baruch Mordechai, are fairly even. And if you think about it, we're not talking about the distinction between Mordechai and Haman. That's like day and night. We're talking about the distinction between blessed is Mordechai and cursed is Haman, which are really two sides of the same coin, giving them a sort of equivalence, but not quite. And that is reflected by a very important Jewish concept, we'll say, and that is Binafol Oyevecha Al Tismach. At the downfall of your enemy, do not rejoice. You rejoice at your salvation, but not at the downfall of your enemy. At the Seder table, when we mention the 10 plagues that were brought on the Egyptians, the custom is to pour from our cup of wine, which is a cup of joy, and pour off to diminish its content, because we're talking about God's creations that were smitten on our behalf and for our benefit, but we are not supposed to revel in that. We revel that we came out of Egypt, and we are happy that we crossed successfully and miraculously through the sea, and the drowning of the Egyptians is a a necessary corollary, but not something we should dwell on. And the same thing goes with Haman. So, blessed is Mordechai is different to cursed is Haman, and perhaps, being slightly under the influence of wine, one can lose sight of that distinction. That's a sort of a sophisticated explanation to it, but it's part of the whole picture. But certainly, excessive drinking of other harder liquors is really not at all in the proper way to behave. As many people as do it, as many yeshivot do it, the teachers and the students, it is an appalling thing with very negative ramifications and very little saving grace for it. On the humorous side, some people want to say there is one more beverage besides wine that is spoken about in the Megillah, and that is beer, which in Hebrew is bira, which sounds very much like capital city, as in Shushan HaBira, and therefore some want to say, in addition to wine, you could drink beer, because the Megillah mentions beer those and many times. That's a joke. Or, that's a joke, son, as somebody used to say from the vaudeville days, which are way before my time. But some of the listeners might know where that comes from. That's a joke, son. I think Foghorn Leghorn, or Leghorn Foghorn, the big chicken, used to say that, but he already was parodying an earlier comic routine. Anyway, that's part of the story. Let's wrap up the show with a little mention of Parshat Ki Tisa, and it interjects a serious and even sad note, which I don't mean to spoil Purim with, but it's part of that recurring cycle of Jewish history. Let me start with a mashal, an analogy. Picture a teenage boy who got his driver's license and is very excited about it, and the first time he takes out the car without his father's permission even, and he's careless and reckless and excessive speeding, and he wraps himself around a tree and sustains serious injuries. It takes several operations and many, many months of physical therapy and recuperation time, and finally, a whole year after his accident, his family throws a joyous party for friends and family in celebration of their son's return to health. Now, all of that is good and fine, and there's one thing that's still missing, and that's, when do you sit the boy down and read him the riot act about his careless behavior with a very dangerous vehicle, and lecture him and impose rules and whatever? The answer is, you don't do that at his party. But you gotta do it before the party, after the party, not at the party. You don't want to spoil the party. And that's how I feel about Purim. Purim is a day to celebrate the emergence from dark to light and from oppression to freedom and all kind of good things. Sometime you have to examine the negative things that brought about the conditions that led to the threat of Haman, but not today. Not going to talk about it. Now, we have something coming up this Shabbat which is similar, and that is, we have gone through the full sedras of Teruma and Tetzava, and you'll see the first third of Ki Tisa this week all talks about the glorious and lofty project of making a sanctuary for God to be a focal point of our religious energies. Those two and a third sedras focus on the command to build the Mikdash and everything in it. And next week, the week after this one, in Vayakel and Pekudei, we see the bitzua, the carrying out of these instructions, again in full detail. In between, we have the two-thirds of Ki Tisa, which speak about a devastatingly negative point in Jewish history, the sin of the golden calf. We don't have time to go into it in detail, but let us suffice to say that 40 days after revelation at Sinai, in that miraculous experience, we blew it in a grand, grand way. And we are forgiven for it, but it always looms there in the background. And that's what I meant before about examining why Purim came about and why other calamities and tragedies happen. This is something that we always have to ask ourselves. At the same time, not exactly, before, after, when we celebrate, rightfully so, and thank God for many, many great moments and great events in history that contribute to our continued existence as the Jewish people. On that note, I wish you a Purim Sameach and a Shabbat Shalom L'Hishtameach.